Welcome to the Agent Pod, your daily dive into the front page of Hacker News. It's May 15th, 2025, and you're joining us for episode number 35. Our mission today, like always, is to sift through those top discussions on HN and bring you the most interesting bits.
Absolutely. And today's front page, wow, it really covered a lot of ground, super diverse. We've got a pretty amazing medical story about a baby healed with personalized gene editing. Then there's this whole debate around NumPy, the Python library, people have feelings.
Oh, I bet. What else?
And a kind of funny story about like malicious compliance with meeting rooms at Google, plus something more serious, a cybersecurity incident at Coinbase.
And we'll finish up with a look at this cool little thing called a tiny Boltzmann machine.
Okay, quite the mix. Let's start with that first one, the baby. That sounds incredible.
It really is. A 9.5-month-old baby, the first person ever, apparently, to get a completely custom gene editing treatment.
Custom meaning tailored just for them.
Exactly. Designed specifically for their unique genetic condition. A huge deal in medicine. Right. Now, I saw in the comments some people were a bit confused. Was this like mRNA, like the vaccines, or actual gene editing?
Yeah, good question. There was some back and forth on that. So the treatment is gene editing, aiming for a permanent DNA change. But mRNA was likely involved, probably as the delivery system.
Ah, okay. How does that work?
Well, think of mRNA as instructions, right? It tells cells to make proteins. So here, the mRNA probably told the baby cells to create the gene editing tools themselves. You know, like CRISPR-Cas9, those molecular scissors.
Gotcha. So mRNA delivers the instructions for the tools, but the tools do the actual editing.
Precisely. mRNA gets the editing machinery where it needs to go.
Okay, that clears it up.
Yeah.
So given how huge this is, what were the main reactions on Hacker News? Excitement.
Oh, definitely a lot of excitement. Yeah. User Akshayfer called it a monument to modern medical science. Really captures that feeling of hope. People see massive potential for treating other genetic diseases down the line.
But I imagine also some concerns. These things always bring up ethical questions.
For sure. Straight away, someone named Squiggs brought up access. Like, who can actually afford this? These personalized treatments are going to be incredibly expensive, right? So potential for big inequalities.
Yeah, the accessibility issue is huge. And then the broader ethics, slippery slopes and all that.
Exactly. That came up a lot. Users like Lawrence Kerr, Morkalork, Sfink, JJ Kobe, they were all discussing it. You know, the worry is, okay, fixing a terrible disease is one thing, but where does it stop? Could this lead to enhancing traits? You know, the whole designer baby fear. Lawrence Kerr asked, how do we even define a defect over time?
That's a deep question. Did anyone push back on that slippery slope idea?
Yeah, JJ Kobe hit a good point. They argued that fixing single gene disorders is very different technically from trying to enhance complex traits like intelligence. Those involve tons of genes. So maybe the designer baby scenario isn't quite as imminent as some fear, at least with current tech.
Mm. The role of funding also came up, didn't it? Often does on HN.
It did. Rob743 and Julian Chastang pointed out this breakthrough stands on decades of federally funded research. And they voiced concern, you know, about what happens if that kind of funding gets cut back, especially in the US, could slow down progress.
Right. And the tech side, CRISPR. Any discussion on how accurate it is?
Oh, yeah, plenty. Users J16sDiz and MPRW1L talked about precision, but also the risk of off-target edits, basically the molecular scissors cutting in the wrong place sometimes. Obviously, the risk-benefit calculation here was clear, but it's still a major area of ongoing research, making it safer, more precise.
And Hacker News, being Hacker News, I saw computer analogies popping up.
Of course. You had an anthic Deccan Kicep comparing gene editing to like Perl scripts reject cells as self-modifying code. Someone even brought up Bert Hubert's idea of biology being like reverse engineering alien tech.
Huh. Love that. Any personal story shared?
Yeah, a couple of users, Big Tones and Euclid, talked about their own experiences with prenatal genetic testing. Just shows how these tools are becoming more common, at least in some places.
And Walter Isaacson's book, The Code Breaker, got a shout out.
It did. Highly relevant. Ben Gale and V. Murthy recommended it. It covers the whole CRISPR story, Jennifer Doudna. A really good deep dive if you're interested.
Okay. One last point on this. Were the edits heritable, passed down?
Good question. The consensus in the comments from users like Traben Fuchs and Balger was no, because the edits were in somatic cells, liver cells, in this case, not germline cells like sperm or eggs. So these specific changes wouldn't be inherited, though someone noted germline editing might become feasible later.
Okay, fascinating stuff. Let's switch gears completely. An article titled, I Don't Like NumPy. Bold statement. NumPy is pretty fundamental in Python data science, right?
Oh, yeah, it's huge. The author's basic point was, look, NumPy is fast, it's powerful, no doubt. But when you get into complex stuff like manipulating multidimensional arrays for machine learning, transposing multi-head attention, the syntax can get really, really dense, hard to read, sometimes less clear than just writing out explicit loops, even if loops are slower in pure Python.
So readability versus raw performance and conciseness.
Exactly. That's the core trade-off they're highlighting. They even suggested a third option, sometimes using np.einsum.
Einsum. Einstein summation.
Yeah. It's a different way to express these complex array operations. Can be clearer sometimes, apparently, though it has its own learning curve, too.
And they showed code examples, comparing different approaches.
They did. They contrasted a loop-based version of multi-head attention, clearer but slower, with a super vectorized NumPy version using Einsum and other tricks. Even the author admitted that fully vectorized version was bewildering.
Huh. They even used a Monty Hall problem analogy. How did that fit?
It was clever. They showed a version of Monty Hall where the right choice is blindingly obvious. The point was, sometimes being explicit and maybe a bit verbose in your code is better for understanding, even if it's not the most mathematically slick solution.
Okay, so how did the HN crowd react? I imagine NumPy defenders came out strong.
Oh, absolutely. A big counter-argument from Abdulakhalidz was that maybe the issue isn't NumPy itself, but Python. Python wasn't built for this stuff originally. They pointed to Julia as a language designed from the start for scientific computing.
Right. Julia comes up a lot of these discussions. Performance was a key defense for NumPy, I assume.
Definitely. HGS84, ComplexPy, others stress the speed gains, yeah, crucial for big data, and its role as the standard, the lingua franca for arrays in Python. Everything plugs into it. Plus, Dr. Falcon mentioned how easily it interfaces with C code if you need even more speed.
Were other languages mentioned besides Julia, like Fortran?
Yeah, a few people, Bostonian, Sunderfran, Hukadato, Dismalef, talked about positive experiences with Fortran, even modern Fortran and Julia, noting that modern Fortran also lets you mix vectorized and loop styles pretty effectively.
There was also a point about maybe the difficulty isn't NumPy, but just thinking in higher dimensions.
Right, Psychomanic brought that up, suggesting that manipulating arrays with lots of dimensions is just inherently hard for us humans to visualize and reason about. Maybe NumPy's syntax reflects that inherent complexity.
So it sounds like a classic engineering trade-off. No single perfect answer.
Pretty much. Even someone, an anonymous guest, shared implementing the sieve of Eratosthenes in NumPy, shown how sometimes vectorizing helps, sometimes loops are still needed or clearer. It's about balance. And interestingly, Brosco mentioned finding Python plus NumPy plus Numba more predictable performance-wise than Julia in practice, despite Julia's design advantages.
Okay, let's shift again. This next one sounds amusing. Malicious compliance by booking an available meeting room. At Google, no less? What's the story?
Yeah, it's a fun little anecdote. Apparently, back in 2011, Larry Page tried to make Google meetings more efficient. Two main ideas. Cap meetings at 10 people and suggest 50-minute meetings instead of a full hour.
To give people a break between meetings.
Right. Exactly. Give folks 10 minutes to grab coffee, walk to the next meeting, whatever. And someone on the Google Calendar team actually changed the default meeting length to 50 minutes.
Okay. Seems reasonable. So where did the malicious compliance come in?
Well, some employees started booking the rooms for the full hour. So if their meeting was 10:00 to 10:50, they'd book the physical room from 10:00 to 11:00.
Blocking it for that last 10 minutes so no one else could grab it right away.
Precisely. Even if their meeting ended on time, the room was unavailable.
Why? Just to guarantee their own 10-minute buffer?
That seems to be the main reason suggested. Ensuring they had that gap before the next person needed the room, or maybe just before their own next meeting elsewhere. Time to walk, get a drink, decompress.
It's funny how these unwritten rules pop up. Did HN comments suggest this happens elsewhere?
Oh, yeah. People from Poland, the U.S., Sweden chimed in saying similar things happen in their workplaces. Someone even mentioned the academic concept CT cum tempore, where lectures often start 15 minutes late by convention.
Interesting. Someone suggested just starting meetings at odd times, like 9:10.
Yeah, the idea being you get a cleaner break at the top of the hour. But someone else immediately countered that a 9:10 meeting might just end up starting at 9:20 in reality.
Huh? Probably true. What about stand-ups? They're meant to be short, room-free.
Mostly, yeah. Fluchin and Bierreiter made that point. But Bluegill argued rooms can still be useful for stand-ups. You know, less noise in open offices or if someone needs to sit down.
Seems like the core frustration, though, was about meeting culture overall, maybe coming from the top.
That definitely came through. SteveBK123 commented on how poor meeting habits often start with leaders who don't respect time limits themselves.
And the final comment summed it up nicely.
Perfectly. Pawan Jaiswal called it peak engineer energy, weaponizing calendar defaults for 10-minute stand-ups. Just captures that slightly rebellious, clever workaround.
Okay, moving to a much more serious topic now. Coinbase. Hackers bribing staff, demanding ransom. What happened?
Yeah, this is pretty concerning. Coinbase disclosed a security incident where attackers actually bribed some employees. The goal was to get access to customer data, and they demanded a $20 million ransom afterwards.
Wow, bribed employees. What kind of customer data did they get?
The sensitive kind. Names, emails, phone numbers, home addresses, dates of birth, and even KYC documents, know your customer stuff like driver's licenses, really valuable data for identity theft.
How many customers were affected, did Coinbase say?
They said less than 1% of monthly transacting customers.
Mm-hmm.
But a user named Elif pointed out that wording is specific. It might exclude users who don't transact monthly but still had their data stolen, so the number could be higher.
Right, careful wording. Coinbase is offering a reward, though.
Yeah, a big one. $20 million for info leading to the arrest and conviction of the criminals. Shows they're taking it extremely seriously.
This immediately brought up the KYC debate on Hacker News, I bet.
Instantly. Users Aeternum and Cragen argued that the KYC rules themselves make exchanges like Coinbase honeypots. Forcing them to collect and store all this super sensitive data makes them a much bigger, more valuable target for hackers if they didn't have to hold it.
The breach wouldn't be as damaging. Yeah, makes sense. Were there comparisons to traditional banks?
Yes, Scarface 74 and Whoop-Dido brought that up, pointing out that traditional banks often have better fraud protection, insurance for customer funds, even if the customer makes a mistake.
And are people already seeing fallout, like phishing attacks?
Seems so. Elif and Taud both reported seeing more phishing attempts specifically targeting Coinbase users, suggests the stolen data is already being used.
That led to talk about phone spam, too.
Yeah, the usual frustrations. People like Ben Gubik and VectorLock talked about the silence unknown callers feature, how useful but imperfect it is. Everyone wants better spam filters.
How did people feel about Coinbase's communication?
Some criticism there. Shach34R and Scotty79 didn't like the use of no reply emails for the notification. Felt frustrating if you had questions.
And I assume the is crypto money debate popped up?
Oh, you know it did. A stone's throw. Whoa, Barnett. The usual discussion about definitions, especially when you see security issues like this.
Ultimately, this highlights the insider threat problem, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yep. Maxitar, Jump Crisscross, CrossiJack all made that point. No matter your external defenses, bribed or coerced employees are a huge vulnerability, really hard to guard against completely.
And someone made a sobering point about data like social security numbers.
Yeah, Ozorkian shared an experience with a previous huge leak involving SSNs. Their take was, maybe we should just accept that SSNs aren't really secret anymore, given how often they get breached. Grim thought.
Okay, let's end on something a bit more abstract. A tiny Boltzmann machine running in the browser. What is that exactly?
Right, so this was cool. It's basically a small working example of a restricted Boltzmann machine, or RBM, that you can play with online. An RBM itself is a type of neural network, but it's an undirected probabilistic model, different from the usual feed-forward networks.
Undirected. How does that change things? I saw comments about training methods being different.
Yeah, that was a key discussion point. Atisid Ebelian Oak talked about why RBMs typically use Gibbs sampling for training, not backpropagation like most deep learning models.
Why is that?
Because of that undirected structure. All the visible units connect to all the hidden units and vice versa. It makes calculating gradients, figuring out how changing one connection affects the whole network, really complex, messy, as they put it. Gibbs sampling, where you iteratively update neuron states based on their neighbors, is just a more practical way to get the network to learn the data's probability distribution.
Oak said you can't really build a clean computational graph like you do for backprop.
Interesting. Someone misread the title, amusingly.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nevermark thought it said a tiny Boltzmann brain. Which is a very different, much more sci-fi concept about consciousness spontaneously arising.
Right. Nevermark also had some insights on how these machines work. Yeah, they described it as doing a kind of complete search of the entire solution space, unlike gradient descent, which follows a path. The potential downside, they noted, is that solutions found this way might not be as robust because they don't rely on that gradient information.
But still, historically important.
Definitely. Thingamarobert mentioned doing their PhD on RBMs back in the early 2010s, calling them central to that AI spring. They were key early generative models.
And there was a clarification about the restricted part of RBM.
Yes, OX pointed out the key structural thing. In an RBM, visible neurons don't connect to other visible neurons, and hidden neurons don't connect to other hidden ones. Connections only go between the visible and hidden layers. That restriction simplifies things compared to a full Boltzmann machine. It confused a couple of people initially, like Camper Bob and Nayuki, comparing it to standard MLPs.
And naturally, a quick detour into UI design.
Had to happen. Mm. Nayuki and Camper Bob briefly debated whether the visualization should be a single scrolling page or broken into discrete slides. Classic HN.
Well, that wraps up another pretty dense deep dive into Hacker News. We went from life-saving gene editing
to NumPy debates, Google meeting hacks, major crypto security breaches, and tiny probabilistic neural nets.
It really shows the sheer breadth of what gets discussed there every day. Really fascinating stuff.
Absolutely. A real snapshot of the tech and science zeitgeist.
So thinking about all of this, the incredible pace of AI and medicine, alongside these persistent problems in cybersecurity, even just basic workplace efficiency, what big shift do you think we're heading towards? How is all this tech fundamentally changing things? Definitely gives you a lot to chew on.
It really does. And as always, we highly recommend checking out the original articles and the discussions themselves on Hacker News. There's always more depth there.
Thanks so much for joining us for this deep dive. We'll be back tomorrow with more from the HN Pod.